Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 50 with Adam, Kate, and Holland. I'm your host, John X. Bet you didn't expect the episode to open this way, did you? Well, the reason it is because when I spoke to Adam, Kate, and Holland about a month ago for the interview, he was at a place where he was uncertain about the future of his pilot that he'd shot for True TV called Those Who Can't. Well, I recorded this intro over the weekend, and today is Tuesday as I record this. It was announced today that Those Who Can't was picked up for 10 episodes by True TV. So very exciting, and I just wanted to make sure to put that in there. Adam is an awesome guy. This is a great episode. And the intro, I didn't want to re-record the whole thing, but I wanted to put this little addendum on there. You can read all about the announcement. I linked to it on johnofalltrades.us, so go to my homepage. You can find it there. And as long as you're there, you should go and pre-order Adam's new album called Backyards. I have a link to that as well. So go to johnofalltrades.us and learn more about Those Who Can't on True TV and pre-order Adam's album, Backyards. But for now, here's episode 50 of the John of All Trades podcast. Let's start the show. Start the show!
You have all made it through the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, 50th episode spectacular. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. 50th episode, you guys. 50th episode spectacular. Granted, it's just a regular episode, but a special episode because we're at the half century mark. And I always wanted to do something like loud and barfy like that. 50th episode spectacular. Or go back to my old radio voice and do it super barfy like, hey, you're listening to the John of All Trades podcast. Welcome to the 50th episode spectacular. No, that stops right now. No, we're not going into barfy radio voice. But I am going to get excited because this week's episode is one that I am super stoked about. I've wanted him on the podcast since I've had the idea for the podcast, but never really had an in. And for whatever reason, I felt hesitant or unsure to cold call him. I mean, I've cold called some people here on the podcast. Like, I've had some people on here who I didn't know before. But for whatever reason, I felt sort of weird about this one. So I was talking to my buddy Sam, and he listened to the show and he goes, dude, it's a really good show. I have an idea for someone who might be good on the podcast. And I said, oh yeah, who's that? And he said, do you know Adam, Kate, and Holland? And I go, are you fucking kidding me, dude? Yeah, I know who Adam, Kate, and Holland is. Adam, Kate, and Holland fucking rules. He's awesome. He's just a great comedian and a great writer and someone I would love to interview. Do you know him? And he goes, yeah, our families grew up together. I'd be happy to make an introduction for you. And I go, fucking, are you kidding me? That's fantastic. So he made the introduction via email. I corresponded with Adam for over the course of a few months. He's super busy. I think when I first reached out to him, he was touring in Asia. And from there, like, we just managed to finally set a time and we talked to each other, I want to say like a month ago, and it was great. And the thing that was so great about it was you always hope that people you sort of admire and people who are sort of an inspiration to you, and I'll get into that in a minute, are going to be cool dudes, like, and good guys. And he came over and he was just like the sweetest guy ever. Just like an awesome, awesome dude. He said hi to my baby. He talked to my wife. He played with my cat. And we came down to my basement. Turns out, I mean, he grew up here. He lived in Park Hill. Like, that's where he grew up. He went to East High School. So we bullshitted about the neighborhood for a little bit and spent like an hour and a half together. We were down here in the basement just bullshitting. And this podcast covers a lot of ground. We spent some time talking about Denver a little bit. We talk about Adam living in Spain. We talk about his pilot that is, I think, still undecided. Those Who Can't. True TV is deciding whether or not they're going to make a bunch of them or not. We talk about his comedy career. We talk about being on the road. I have sort of some minor entry points into empathizing with stand-ups. Like, I tell a story about what it's like to sort of bomb. Like, I do presentations. And so I sort of understand bombing in my own little tiny pissant way, like in my own little corporate way. But we talk about that. We talk about when you're presenting and you're on the road and you're sort of on a high and then you end up depressed and people will chase that feeling. We talk a little bit about baseball. I mean, there's just a ton going on. And he was like just ready and willing to bullshit about everything that came to mind. And the conversation was a lot of fun. And so when I say you hope someone that you admire and someone that is an inspiration to you is cool, I've always sort of looked up to Adam. We're roughly the same age, but he's a dude I've followed for a long time. I used to read him in the Westword. He wrote a great, great story about going down to Rocky Spring training for the first time. He's written some amazing pieces. There's one in the Atlantic about his sister on his own personal site called AdamIsFreakingOutRightNow.com. It's a great web address, by the way. AdamIsFreakingOutRightNow.com. He's got some incredible writing on there. And then the first thing I ever remember seeing him in was the Geek Bowl rules video. I think it was for Geek Bowl 4. And he absolutely killed me in that. And then I met him actually at Geek Bowl 5, and we talk about that in the episode. And then there was this other time I saw him while he was getting his hair cut. And I debated about whether or not to go up to him. And that story unfolds in kind of a funny way, and it's right at the beginning, so you'll hear us talking about that. But just a tremendous, tremendous episode, and I'm so pleased to bring it to you. I wanted to do something really good for the 50th episode, and this is that. This is a really, really good episode, and one I'm proud of. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for downloading us. If you're on iTunes or Stitcher, please take a minute to give us a rating and a review. That is just enormously helpful. Share this with your friends. Share the podcast with your friends. Pass it around. Share it on Facebook. Retweet it. Fucking paste it into an email. Copy and paste it into an email and send it to people. That would be great. I don't care how you share it, but spread the word. I'd love to draw more listeners to this because this is something I'm really proud of. And I couldn't do it without you guys. So thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing it in any way you could. And let's give some love to our sponsor, shall we? The sponsor is 4Degrees. The number 4, D-E. GRE.ES, and they are your one-stop shop for all your web solutions, anything that you need. If you're building a website, if you're trying to reach a lot of people, trying to build a grassroots army across social media, they're good on Facebook, they're good on Twitter, they're good on LinkedIn, they're good on Instagram, they're good on all the social media platforms, ones you don't even know about. I'm sure I'm not up on all the social media platforms, but I'll bet 4Degrees is. So give them a call. Give them an email. What the fuck am I talking about? Call. They specialize in social media. Hit them up. They're on Twitter. They're on Facebook. And their web address is 4Degrees. The number 4, DEGRE.ES. Proud sponsors of the John of All Trades podcast. All right. I've set this up enough. I've labored it enough. Adam Caton Holland is here this week. And I could not be more thrilled with the way this chat turned out. So let's get to it. This is episode 50 of the John of All Trades podcast with Adam Caton Holland, one of the preeminent Denver comedians, if not the premier Denver comedian. So let's get to it. The episode starts right now.
It's really cool. I love this neighborhood.
I grew up in Golden.
Okay.
And then we lived in Westwash Park for a while, and you can't buy there.
No.
I mean, we're not.
You know. I'm not far from there. I'm in Baker.
Okay, nice.
The South Broadway area.
Do you own? Or mm-hmm. Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got friends who live over in Baker.
Yeah. I got in like 2006, and
nice.
It was the right time to get in.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I'm going to ask you to hold that.
Yeah, that's kind of how I like. Is that cool if I do that?
If you'd like. Yeah, just hold the whole fucking thing. Hey,
what? This is my preferred method.
Yeah.
Does that sound all right for me?
No, that sounds good. And no one down here has ever held it like that.
This is like a pro move, man. I'm telling you. I've done podcasts like this, and it's just like you can gesticulate with a little more clarity.
All right. You know what? I'm gonna try that.
I recommend it. I don't do it on my podcast because I'm actually seated at a table, and you can't like recline like right. This on a nice couch. But yeah. In a couch setting, I find this to be the way to go.
Well, and I mean, we're about the same height. Mm-hmm. And so I really like couches like this because your feet are firmly on the ground and you're not back like you're at the kiddie table.
Yeah. No, this is perfect.
Yeah. Where you're not just dangling.
Also, this is like a mic stand for me. And I like, you know what I mean?
Oh, so right, like, right, right.
This is my comfort zone.
I've always wondered about that with comics. Is that just like a comfort thing where some, you know, like the free form and they like to hold it like the ice cream cone, and some like it in the stand and some don't want to hold the stand at all? How do you find that?
I think it's just whatever feels natural to you. I've changed. Like now I like to, I grab the mic in my right hand and I just rest my elbow on the mic stand, like super casual.
Nice.
But I've seen guys like put their hat on the mic stand. I've seen dudes put their take off their jacket and put it on the mic stand. It's however you want to do it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So sitting down here in the basement, Adam, Kate, and Holland, who grew up a couple of houses down from, or a couple of blocks down, right?
Yeah, 9 blocks down I grew up. But I just found out today my parents had a house like 3 houses down from you on this very block, which is crazy.
Did you tell them you were coming down here?
Yeah, I told my dad. And I was like, he's like, where? And I was like, well, it's on Bel Air. And he's like, well, where on Bel Air? And I was like, gave him the address.
Right.
And he's like, we were like 3 houses down. So he's like, look at this address when you go by. And I just saw my parents' house. He's like, your sister was conceived at that house. I was like, I didn't need to know that, Dad. But he clued me in.
So, man, you're a busy guy. So I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, no sweat. It's no problem.
And this is, I would call it the third interaction we've ever had.
Yeah.
And I can take you through the first two.
Please, by all means.
Okay. So the first one was after Geek Bowl 5.
Okay.
And I think I heard you talking to Dicker in that, because I just interviewed Dicker too.
Okay.
And the thing that was hard was I listened to your episode of My Dining Room Table with Dicker.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, shit, this is like the exact interview I wanted to conduct.
Right.
So I had to take it in a slightly different direction. But, you know, that was good. It was a fucking killer interview.
Thanks.
But you talked about how you bombed hard.
Oh, man. One. Yeah. That's the first time you ever saw me?
Yeah, live.
Oh,
well,
God.
Okay, yeah. But I went to Geek Bowl largely because of that rules video you did for the Geek Bowl the year before.
Yeah.
I love
Jim
that
Hickox
video. Yeah.
And Andrew Orvidal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That video was hilarious, and I was in from the get-go as soon as you did the 2020 opening.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, dude, that killed me. I'm like, okay, this is hilarious. And then I found out you're going to be at Geek Bowl 5, and we were playing anyway, and I'm like, fat, dude.
Yeah.
And you'd trash-talked all the other cities beforehand.
Right, exactly. It was like the ideal bad situation for performing. It was like a Geek Bowl. It was deep into the Geek Bowl. Like, everybody just wanted trivia. And then I was, like, during a scoring break. So not only did they not want to hear any entertainment, they just wanted more trivia / their scores. I'd also pretty much shit-talked every single one of their cities.
Right.
And all these people were there. So it was not good. It was just pretty much a chorus of boos, like, well, from the get-go.
Well, and hard acoustics, too, right? I mean...
Yeah, I mean, it was the Fillmore, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is pretty... it's not ideal for comedy. It's a big concert venue, but not perfect for comedy.
Yeah, I saw...
But the funny thing was, after that gig, like, everybody was, like, befriending me on Twitter and, like... They're just nerds. They just want somebody to interact with them.
Yeah, yeah. You need something to sort of, you need that thing to go, nah, nah.
Yeah, well, they gave it to me pretty good. That was hilarious. I ate shit that gig.
Well, the thing was, though, I saw you there, and I thought it was good. I mean, I thought it was fine, but we were right down near the front, too.
Yeah, that's right. I remember it was a huge venue.
Oh,
so
God.
The people in the back were like, totally disconnected from it, and
yeah,
it was pretty much anything that could have gone wrong went wrong there.
Yeah,
but
no,
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Well, yeah, but afterward, you still managed to show up at the after party at Jonesy's Eat Bar.
Yeah,
and so I was chatting with you there,
okay,
and telling you how much I enjoyed your writing in the Westword and like all that stuff. And you wrote I guess a couple of years before that Colorado Rockies thing where you went down to spring training.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. And I loved that article so much that I actually, I got the opportunity to meet, to like go to this Rockies Q&A thing before the, I want to say 2010 season maybe.
Okay.
And I ripped off one of your questions, which was, Tulo was up there, and I modified it a bit from something you did in there, but I'm like, Tulo, question on everyone's mind, really weighing everyone down, what's your walk-up music going to be?
Yeah, right.
Got a huge laugh. And so, like, I lifted it entirely from you. But I had a bunch of real questions I wanted to ask, but I wanted the laugh, too.
Yeah, of course.
So,
you had to choose what you want, man. You want that laugh or you want a good interview?
Yeah.
Go for the laugh.
I went for the laugh on that one. But, yeah, you were really cool after that. I could tell you were beaten up from that show, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, anytime you do a gig and it doesn't go well, I mean, I'm more... just like thick skin than most comedians, but you have a bad gig and you feel it for a few days. You feel it until you get on the stage and do better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All
the circumstances were impossible. I knew this, that, and the other. I knew that I was not in a position to fail. And still I'm like, no, fuck that. I bombed. You can explain it away or you can just be like, nope, that sucked. I just got punched in the gut and I need to go back out on another stage and repent.
Well, yeah, it's like Joe Cabot says in Reservoir Dogs, you shit in your pants and dive right in, right?
It's, I guess, yes, exactly.
I suppose, right? I'm sure you get that all the time.
No, I don't, but but yeah, no, I've learned to not take these things too personally, and if it's like at a weird, you know, it wasn't a comedy event.
Right.
It was a geek bowl trivia thing. It wasn't meant for me to succeed. I'm not going to like tuck my tail between my legs and not go to the after party. I'll just drink my way through it.
Exactly. The other time, the second time was we both got our haircut at the parlor.
Oh yeah.
And I saw you there and you were coming back from getting your, you know, like washed up, like shampooed and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh shit, there's Adam Caton Hall. Like there's a guy I know and I like. And I felt too weird going up to you because like when you're getting your haircut, you know, you're kind of vulnerable. You're sitting there under that cape and like it's weird. So instead, I did the super awkward, like, new millennium thing and tweeted at you.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Do you really?
Yeah. Because I remember, I didn't know it was you. I didn't put it together. But yeah, I remember somebody tweeting at me like, were you at the parlor? I was like, I don't know. I remember that. I remember that.
Yeah. Exact, and what you said was, you're like, oh, you should have come up or just given me $20. And, you know, I don't want to be one of those fans. Walking up, giving you money all the time.
I'm glad I said that, but I'm glad that you didn't. Like I would not have wanted you to walk up there when I'm getting my hair did.
Yeah. No. That no.
I don't know why I said that. You shouldn't have come up. You were exactly right. And me tweeting was just trying to be too polite, I guess.
So I read the situation right. That's always reassuring to hear. You know, because
like you, who would want someone coming up to them when they're getting their hair cut? You're exactly right.
Yeah. Well, that leads me.
Plus,
to
I'm very vain, so I'm incredibly vulnerable in that moment. Like, yeah. I'm off my game. Perhaps she hasn't finished the cut. Now you see me with that haircut.
Right.
I think I'm less good looking than I actually am.
Yeah, it's
that
like
that gets out there. It's a vicious circle.
Yeah, no, it's downward spiral from that point, and you know that's no good. But that leads me to a question. You've been, I would call you a fixture of the Denver comedy scene for a while now.
Yeah, definitely.
How often does that happen where you'll just be like out in Denver and someone like recognizes you or comes up to you or fucking awkwardly tweets at you?
I don't know, man. It's happening more and more.
Yeah.
For myself and for Ben Roy and Andrew Overdahl, who are my partners in crime in the Grawlix.
Yeah.
It's cool. I'm in Denver by choice, and so are Andrew and Ben. And so I think what happens with comics is you get decent in your local scene and then you move to New York or LA.
Right.
And I think not only did we get decent, we got good, and we constantly go to New York and LA, and we've all been on late night TV and we've done Comedy Central and we have a pilot coming out and this and that. But normally those things happen because you've moved to New York or LA.
Right.
Somehow we skipped the step and we've stayed in our hometown. So I think it's sort of an aberration that like, it sounds arrogant, but like guys that have reached the level we've reached at are still in their smaller market comedy town. So it's great in a way. It's kind of like, I feel like Denver's rooting for us all a little bit. And if that comes with a little more recognition, like it's awesome. It's nice.
Yeah, totally.
At first it weirded me out, but I like it. I like feeling like you're known, you know, and I like, not that I'm anywhere nearly on this level, but I remember reading an interview with Dave Letterman one time, and he's talking about just his fame and how everybody knows him. And he's like, it's perfect because everywhere I go, it's a small town. People say, hey, Dave. And I say, hey. And that's about it. Like, so he's like, I'm this Indiana small town boy, but I've created this world for myself where people just walk up and say, hey, Dave.
Wow.
And he kind of likes it. And I was like, I kind of can see that.
You know, I'm interested in that point you made about, you know, you build yourself up in your local scene and then you head off to New York or LA. In a way, you guys, by getting big in your local scene and then getting some national exposure, because I did listen to the one of your most recent My Dining Room Tables with where you interviewed Andrew and Ben.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And that was really fun because I love when you can just – that's why I like the Nerdist Hostfuls too.
Yeah, definitely.
Where you just
with
watch
the
these guys
– Matt Myra and Jonah. Yeah.
Where these guys just like riff and, you know, talk, and you can tell they're really friendly with each other. And you may not even know like – you weren't even there, but you guys talked about this gym when you were out in LA and the hotel you were staying at. And I go, okay, like this is like, you get to peer through the keyhole a little bit.
Yeah, right.
Which is like kind of cool. But, you know, you guys have this recognition and it's almost like you're doing that to build up the Denver comedy scene.
I think so.
That intentional?
I don't know. I mean, you know, the Denver comedy scene's always been good.
Right.
And then I think we kind of came to be in the sort of, it coincided nicely with the rise of alt comedy and podcasts and comedy getting hip and cool. Like, I think comedy was kind of a a thing that people went out to see. Like, well, let's go see the concept of comedy this evening. And now in 2015, that sounds ridiculous. Like, no, let's go see this comedian who we've researched and we know. The way you would go see a band where you're like, let's go see the blanket concept of music this evening. You're like, no, let's go see this band that we know and like. And so that literally has happened in the past like 10 years.
Okay.
And we've kind of risen up in this era of like taste making comedy.
Right.
So I think it's been a, it's coincided with that really well. And I think in that same sort of growth, you know, this growth in comedy and this movement towards specificity in comedy, I think there's been a real affinity for people who do it DIY style, punk rock style,
totally,
for lack of a better term. And us sort of sticking to our guns and being here, I think now people think that's cool.
Yeah,
we're just like desperately clinging at straws and being like, the grass is greener, we should have moved to LA, we're idiots.
Right, right.
But I think we've got a little bit of respect for being like, no, we're kind of doing it our way, a little bit non-traditionally. And I think that just kind of is lucky that that coincided with a period of comedy appreciation where that's really celebrated.
Well, yeah, and to that point, the DIY aspect, one of the things I was referring to...
What's your cat's name right here?
This is Jax.
Hey, Jax.
He's a big dude, too.
He is big.
The joke I always make is, and it's the joke is totally dated now, but he was in the Mitchell Report. You know, he was one of Barry Bonds' cats.
But asterisk cat.
Yeah, totally. His home run record is in dispute. But, you know, the DIY aspect, I went to the first High Plains Comedy Festival.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, down, and I was there like the night that you guys were performing with Kanane and Matt Bronger.
Was that at the Gothic?
Yeah, that Gothic.
Hey, and Jax.
And you guys did that yoga
bit?
Yeah.
Where Andrew and I had our shirts off like yoga instructors.
Right. Yeah. And then Ben comes in all CrossFit.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I'm curious, like that's your creation, right?
Or is the High Plains?
Yeah.
Yeah. Myself and this guy, Andy Jewett.
Okay.
Who is hilarious. He's a comedian recently, but he's also been a producer for years. He runs this thing called Sex Pot Comedy.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
With him and Kayvon, it's like sex and pot, everything that's great. But they have a kind of comedy empire, and Andy and I just do the High Plains together.
Okay. So what was it like creating that? And was that difficult? And what did you sort of learn in doing that?
Well, it's funny because right now I'm starting to work on year three and like starting to line up guests and stuff, but it wasn't difficult. It was just bigger than anything I've ever done.
Okay.
You know, I've run shows since I started doing comedy, but this was like run a festival.
Right.
It was difficult in the magnitude of it. And that first year I ran myself ragged. Like I was exhausted. I couldn't really enjoy the festival. Second year we kind of hired on somebody to help do the awful nitty gritty work so we could actually like perform and have fun. But I don't know. It's like when that's just another one of those things. You just like, I want to do it, so I'm going to do it. I don't know how, but I'm going to figure it out. And it's not rocket science. It's just putting on a bunch of shows.
Right, right, right.
And luckily, Illegal Pete's teamed up with us, and so they're cool as hell. Virgil Dickerson, who runs a record label Greater Than, but he's basically number two at Illegal Pete's as well.
Okay.
He's just got so much experience that we kind of just picked his brain a ton to help get it off the ground.
Oh, that's awesome. Was that first, I mean, doing a first of anything is always kind of daunting. Was that first one successful?
Yeah, it was. Like, not, I also have gone to a bunch of comedy festivals, and I'm not dumb, so I called all those people up, and I was like, what were the pitfalls? What do you wish you had done differently? I did my research, but I guess it's very rare for a comedy festival to, like, make money the first year, and we did, and we made money the second year, and so now we're on to year three. Yeah.
That's awesome. Anything you can share about it, or too early on?
Not a fucking thing. I can tell you all the comics that have said no so far.
Sweet.
No, it's August 20th through 22nd.
Okay.
But we're just lining up acts right now.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, it's January.
January, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a long ways out.
In your success now, I would say
you've had... In my huge success.
Your huge success.
Let's sort of just call a spade.
Yeah, let's call
enormous success.
Let's call a spade a fucking shovel.
There we go.
There we go.
Nice.
So, I stole that one from my dad. I love that one.
I like it, man. I like it. I might steal that from you.
As you sort of branch out into doing some other things, and I'd like to talk about those, but you know, you obviously, or I'm guessing here, I'm speculating, but you got into this for the comedy, right?
Yeah, totally.
But when you do that, and when you're successful, you end up having a bunch of extra work that's sort of ancillarily related to comedy. How much of your day is taken up by the other stuff that goes into like doing comedy so you can like get out there and actually produce it? how much like back end work goes into that type of thing?
Well, it depends on which thing you're talking about. Like,
right.
I mean, I think I just spilled a little sparkling water on your couch. It's fine. I'll just clean it up.
You sit in it.
You sit and you think about what you've done.
Yeah. You sit in it and you feel the wetness.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like, it's hard to answer that. You know, I had a gig last night at Comedy Works that required no work.
Right.
I went and did the show.
How long a set did you have?
20 minutes.
Okay.
Just opening for this guy, Bob Marley.
Bob Marley.
Not the real, not that Bob Marley.
Wait, is he white?
Yeah, white dude.
Yeah.
He's hilarious.
I think I've seen him before.
He's very funny. He's like this, he's from Maine. He's got a thick New England accent. He's great.
Okay, so a white guy from Maine with a thick New England accent. This is Bob Marley. That's tremendous.
I know. So, for example, like I have an agent, I have a manager. I'm booked in Cincinnati in 2 weeks.
Okay.
I didn't do that myself. The agent got it booked, and I'll go collect the paycheck and do the gigs. That's easy. But, you know, I do a monthly show, the Grolix. That requires booking a guest, bringing them in. That requires making a Facebook invite. That requires some press, some advertising, just shit like that. And there's constantly stuff like that. There's the podcast, getting a guest, recording those. There's... Ben and Andrew and I are filming a sketch right now.
Right. For like Funny or Die or something?
Yeah, we got some money from some people to film a sketch.
Oh, cool.
Just like, do it. It's actually the Lonely Island guys.
No shit, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, they gave us some money in there because we've become friends with them. And they're like, here's some money and then we'll see what happens with it. And we'll all go in together if we ever develop this into anything. But just shit like that. So yesterday I met with Ben and Andrew and we wrote that sketch and now we're figuring out the space to film it. And so it's constant. I was talking to Ben Roy the other day and we were both just sort of like, not commiserating, but just bitching like you would with a colleague about how I was like, I do so much in a day, but I can't tell you what I did. Like there's, you know, that you could email for an hour and you've accomplished a ton of shit, but it's just this vague, nebulous, you know, all encompassing comedy work.
Yeah.
So no day looks the same.
Well, that's invigorating because most people, like, I think what you would read in most, like, suicide notes is someone being like, I can't do this shit anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So having that variety, you know, that keeps you fucking vibrant, keeps you creative.
It's good, and it's, I think the one trait I've noticed in a lot of friends who are successful comedians is that, like, yes, they all go out at night and perform a ton, but they all put in work
right.
in the daytime as well, whether it be writing jokes or whether it's like, you know, I'm from when I wake up to about noon, I'm usually working pretty hard on stuff.
Right.
In the afternoons are more leisurely. Go to the gym, do your thing.
Right.
And then hopefully have a gig that night.
I gotcha. So, okay, digging into the work a little bit. Let's say, you know, you said you went to the Comedy Works, you know, that required basically no work. But when you're creating new material, how long from, say, you know, invention, when you have the spark of an idea, where like something happens and you go, okay, this might make a good bit, how long until you feel like, okay, this is like my material?
Right. That just depends on the joke. Like, I used to sit and write at coffee shops and be like, okay, I have an idea for a joke. Let's go hash this out. But now, the less time I have, I more just take the idea to the stage and run it. And then I would say it probably takes 10 times telling it until it's like it's taking its shape.
So you kind of have it like dialed in?
Yeah, and like you cut the fat out, you pull things that didn't work, you add things that do, you add tags, like you just figure it out. There's a lot of, you know, comedy is like you write this thing and you think it's funny, but you don't know until the audience responds.
Right.
And even if you think it's funny and they don't, doesn't matter, you're wrong. Like you can try to force it down their throat a bunch of times, but if it's not getting laughs, it's going to fall out of your repertoire real quick.
I gotcha. That's funny because in my day job, I do like internal trainings. I'll do like presentation trainings. And you always try and like you keep them engaged. And so you have your own jokes and stuff. Like I'm not a comedian, but you try and find funny stuff. And I'm showing this one clip and it's a campaign guy staying too on message and basically repeating, you know, our campaign is going to stay focused on lower taxes, lowering gas prices and creating American jobs. And the guy goes, so no comment. And he goes, our campaign is going to stay focused on, and he does it like four fucking times in a row.
Sounds like Marshawn Lynch.
Kind of, but not, you know, not doing like this awesome performance art with all the uptight NFL writers.
Right.
But at the end of that thing, and I did this like five times. I go, well, you know, it's an improvement from his previous campaign position, which was oil can. Fuck, you laughed, dude. Yeah. You're the first.
Really?
Yeah, because I would say that, and you know, it's a joke about the Wizard of Oz, or referencing the Wizard of Oz. And every time, just silence, just fucking crickets. And I go, okay. And I look over at my other trainer. I'm like, I don't think this joke works. She goes, I've told you a million times it doesn't work. I came home and I showed my wife the clip. And I said the same thing, and she looked at me, and I go, fuck, she's right. That joke never works.
Well, it might be just too obscure a reference.
For a corporate crowd, maybe.
Yeah, and I just, like, how well do people... I mean, I got it immediately, but right. I don't know. Corporate crowd might not be as in tune with their Wizard of Oz as a comedian.
Yeah, you know, you're in there talking about whatever.
Right.
And all of a sudden, there's just this out of left field reference. And,
yeah. Right. I think they're probably not even looking for humor right there. They're like, probably they're in a very literal state of mind.
Right. Who knows? But to your point.
So do you ditch oil? You ditched oil.
Oh, yeah. It's done.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can't stand up there and die over and over again. And so, I mean, that's sort of like my entry point into understanding bombing.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, like, there's also goodwill that you earn. So if you're killing it for 20 minutes straight in a 45-minute set, and you're like, all right, that's how I always work in new material. You pad the up front with some stuff that you know is going to hit.
Yeah.
Then you try some newer stuff. If it doesn't hit, you have better stuff in the back. It's like you just have to sandwich your shit between gold.
Eloquently stated.
Yeah, yeah.
How much would you say you're on the road touring?
It varies. Usually about 2 weekends a month I'm at a comedy club. It's never like this consecutive touring. It's not like city after city after city. I've done that once. But
you're not like a band. Like,
no. Yeah. It's you work comedy clubs.
Right.
So you go, I'm going to Cincinnati February 19th through 22nd or something like that.
Okay.
So I'll be there for 4 days, then I come home. And then in March, I go to South by Southwest for 4 days, and I go to the club in Madison, Wisconsin for 4 days, and that's about it for my March travel, you know, so it's good. It's about 2 weekends out of each month is all I can really stand.
Well, that's not bad. What are some of your favorite places to hit?
LA and New York are always great, but I really like Madison, Wisconsin is one of my favorites. I played it last year. There's these clubs in the middle of the country that are just jewels. I just did one in Bloomington, Indiana, and it's amazing. I wound up recording my upcoming album there. It's such a cool club.
No shit. When's that coming out?
April.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. I'll make sure to get a plug in here.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Madison, Wisconsin. There's a great club in Chicago. There's a great club in Austin. It's funny. There's these little hidden comedy jewels out there, and everybody wants to hit those clubs. Acme in Minneapolis is one. You just wouldn't think it, but they're great.
Right. The one in Bloomington, is that called the Comedy Attic?
It is.
Okay. The reason I know that is because my wife and I watch At Midnight a lot.
Sure. Yeah.
And like, there were like 4 episodes in a row where someone was wearing a fucking Comedy Attic shirt.
Oh yeah, I think I saw Kanane was wearing a hoodie at a Comedy Attic. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I'm like, okay, what is this place? And it was weird sequentially, you know.
That's funny. Yeah, it was good. I did an hour at the Meltdown, which is like this theater in LA, and they did like an evening with Adam Catenhall, and I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna record it and put that out as my album. And I did it, and it was fine.
Right.
But it wasn't that like
wasn't the home run
that you want for the album. So I was recording at the Comedy Attic. I was performing at the Comedy Attic like 2 weeks after, and I knew it was a cool place, having never been. So I just set it up with them. They're like, can you guys record? And they're like, yeah, we can record. And it turned out great. Plus, I'm more a middle-of-the-country type of dude. Like, I like to go to New York and L.A., but I live in Colorado. Right. Like, I feel like a smaller market recording is more my speed.
Well, yeah, you're from flyover country. You may as well pay some heed to flyover country, right?
Exactly.
My wife and I were at the Comedy Works, and John Heffron was recording his special or his next album, and a fucking fight broke out in the middle of it.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
God.
You'll love this. It was someone's 55th birthday party, and so there was a lady who would not stop loudly ordering drinks for everyone to the point where the whole audience was distracted. And finally, I really like the way the Comedy Works has done it. They're very sort of like Gestapo-like down there now with it, which is good. Like, if you're someone who appreciates comedy, you're like, God, shut the fuck up.
Oh, I know. No one came to hear you talk.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
And so this guy gets up in the bouncer's face, and then a scuffle, like, and it's chaos, and everyone's sitting there horrified, like, what is happening? Cops come running down the stairs, and Heffron, like, gets real close to the mic and goes, don't turn off the tape. And I never heard his album. I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if that made it to the album.
Yeah.
Man, when I started out at Comedy Works, they used to have an off-duty cop there in uniform. Nice. And there was no bullshit that went on.
Good.
I miss those days.
Yeah.
This is a funny story. I was opening for Ari Shaffir,
right?
Who's a great comedian.
Yeah.
A while ago, he was just in town, but it wasn't this time; it was the time before. And there were these women there, these like 50-something cougar-esque women,
right?
And they were just squawking, just blah blah the whole show, drunk, like awful. And Ari was shutting them down. I shut them down. Couldn't be fucking reasoned with. So the people kept telling them to shut up. The Comedy Works staff kept telling them to shut up. They wouldn't pay attention. Finally, I got to the point where it was like, you're gone. We're kicking you out.
Yeah.
And there was like 9 of them, and they'd been drinking a lot. And they were like, fine, then we're not paying our bill. And they're like, yes, you are paying your bill. And they're like, no, we're not. And they stormed out. All of them stormed out without paying a bill. And this is comedy club prices. I mean, this is several hundreds of dollars.
Right.
And so they stormed out, and I pieced this all together afterwards. But as they stormed out, they were talking about how great they were. And they were mentioning that they were in from out of town, and they said the name of the hotel they were at, like the Four Seasons or something like that. So a Comedy Works employee went to the Four Seasons, saw them in the bar, just still squawking and being loud.
Yeah.
They called the police on them. The cops went to the Four Seasons, took them all back to Comedy Works, and was like, are these the women? They're like, yep. And then arrested them.
Oh, shit.
And took them downtown, and Ari and I were outside. This was all going on while Ari was on stage.
Yeah.
We were taking photographs of these women being put into cop cars. It's like, never do you get this kind of justice, like uppity rich white women who are just like, you can't tell me what to do, and be like, you can't steal drinks, you're going to jail.
Wow.
It was the best.
Fuck, dude, that's like dealing with hecklers. That's got to be the greatest sort of vindication you've ever seen.
I mean, Ari and I were losing our shit. We couldn't believe we didn't even have the words to. We're like, is this really happening?
Yeah.
Is this a collective dream you and I are both just having right now? It was the best.
Oh, dude, that's fucking spectacular.
Yeah. It was really, really something special.
You mentioned the Meltdown, and I saw you on the Meltdown with Jonah and Kumail.
Yeah,
and what was that experience like?
That was great. Those dudes are really cool.
Yeah,
I've become very good friends with both those guys, and their show is just the best. So I've done that a bunch. You know, before it was a TV show.
Yeah,
I've just whenever I go to LA, they put me up, and the show was really cool. It actually like really accurately captured the feeling of being in that show.
That's cool because like the vibe is really, and I like the way it's filmed because it's filmed a little bit differently and like it looks really cool.
Yeah, the guy who filmed it, I didn't realize at the time, is this dude named Lance Bangs, and I didn't know who that was. And then after we filmed, we were having drinks that night, and Jonah's like, do you know about Lance Bangs? And I was like, no. And he pulled up his IMDb, and it's like, oh shit, here he is doing Nirvana videos.
Yeah.
Here he is doing all of Jackass. Here he is, like, he's this really cool director. He's done a ton of comedy stuff now, and I've now since become friends with him, and just cool opportunities. Like, he was doing this thing for Vice Sports, and he called me up out of the blue. I don't know how he got my cell phone number. He's like, we're filming Seattle versus Denver in Seattle tomorrow. GoPros, hidden cameras. I know you're a Broncos fan. Want to go? And I was like, yeah. And so, like, I got to fly out to Seattle to do that shit, all because I got to do the Meltdown show. It's just like one of those serendipitous turn of events that was
totally
really cool.
That's fucking badass.
But then it was a guy in an orange t-shirt in the nosebleeds of that Seattle game just harassed by those asshole fans.
Are they? I haven't been there. Are they shitty?
Fuck Seattle, man. That stadium, they like built it to be loud.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They pump the sound back in there.
Right.
They're all like 12th man. It's artificial.
It's architectural,
I mean, like, they're excellent fans, but they're just like, we broke the loudest sound noise ever in any NFL stadium. It's like, yeah, because you constructed the stadium to do that.
Yeah,
it wasn't this organic expression of, like, mass Seahawk hysteria. You guys just went for the fucking record through your construction.
Yeah, and not to mention, let's never forget, they ripped off that 12th man shit from Texas A&M.
I didn't know that, but I'll allow it.
Perfect. The Texas A&M for the longest time has had that 12th man shit, and then Seattle's like, no, we got the 12th man. And they, like, you'll see sometimes on Twitter or social media, like, you'll see a news article about it, usually at the start of football season. They'll get pissy with each other.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is funny.
I didn't know that. I hate New England so much, so I wasn't really happy to see New England win, but it was nice to see Seattle lose.
Yeah. No, that's
for their hubris.
Yeah, totally. That and everyone all just slobbing Russell Wilson's knob all week.
Yeah.
God, like, enough already.
Yeah.
So, fuck. I since I brought up At Midnight, I wanted to ask you about that experience because I've been so curious about that show because the first few times I watched it, I'm like, are they coming up with this shit off the cuff? And then I noticed, like, you'll see a lot, like, people looking down.
Yeah, yeah.
At notes. So, like, can you walk through sort of how At Midnight works a little
bit?
I
don't even know if I'm supposed to talk out of turn about it. But I'll just say this. You have a few moments to prepare. Let's just put it that way.
That's fair.
You have a few moments to prepare.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, I don't really know. I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about how the sausage is made.
That's fine. No need to get at cross purposes with anyone here.
I will say it's fun, though, because that's just like it's such a challenge.
Yeah.
It's like, that's what a comic's brain does, is like shitty puns half the time.
Right.
So it's very fun to just get that and have to bang them out real quick on a clock, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, because were you on twice?
I've been on twice.
Okay. And the first time you were eliminated, like you actually got the red light, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I got third technically.
Yeah. And then the second time you won, right?
I did.
Yeah.
I won the internet.
It's got to be a good feeling.
It's great. It was really fun. I'm competitive, so even though it's arbitrary and bullshit, like if you watch it, Hardwick's like points, and the points change left and right, and like there's no rhyme or reason to it. There's no actual game being played.
Right,
it's more just like, were you kind of funny? Hardwick gives you points,
but did he ever non-point you for something?
He would take points away. Yeah.
Okay.
He did it on me once. I can't remember what it was.
Okay.
Usually, if it's like a groaner.
Yeah. Right.
But the second time I won, and that was fucking great. And it just like rains Twitter followers when you do that.
Does it really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's fucking, that's fat.
It's nice. It's very nice. And it's fun. You know who Brody Stevens is?
Yeah.
Brody Stevens, yes. Positive energy.
Right, comedian. Yeah.
He does audience warm up there, and I'm kind of friends with him. So it's just funny. In the commercial breaks, Brody comes out, and he's like, that was a good round. A lot of positive energy in that round. How are you doing, Tuscaloosa? Just like talking to people in the crowd. So when you're just there filming, you're just watching the Brody show that no one even sees at home, but he's just going apeshit on that audience and at every break, and that's a joy to watch.
Oh, that's awesome. Have you ever been on Fallon?
No, but Andrew Orvidal, my buddy, was.
That's right.
He just did his Tonight Show.
I remember
debut.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was asking because the show that people don't see, I went to a Fallon taping.
Okay.
Right? So the show that no one sees is the fucking Roots concert that you get for free.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the Roots will come out. Like, Steve Higgins will introduce the Roots, and the Roots will come out and just play, like, a song and just get everyone going. And the Roots kick fucking ass.
I love the Roots.
So, yeah. So you're watching the Roots, and then I can't remember who the warm-up guy was. He comes out. He does, like, a bunch of crowd work and stuff. And everyone gets jazzed up, and then they take you through, like, the rehearsal, like, okay, you know, then, you know, I'm going to say, here he is, Jimmy Fallon, and they do it, like, fake.
Right.
And so you cheer nothing, which is always, like, it's weird.
Yeah, they get those audience so hyped. Audience warm-up is a strange phenomenon. I know a lot of comedians that have done that, and it's a delicate art. You can do it poorly, but it's all on you. And if you, like, that audience is not good, I've heard of horror stories of the Fallons or whoever just...
Right.
Letting the warm-up comic have it. Like, you blew it tonight. And just like, Jesus.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the movie Mr. Saturday Night?
I don't think I have.
Okay. So, Billy Crystal plays Buddy Young Jr., who is like this, you know, old-timey, like, Borscht Belt comic.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's older, his agent gets him a gig doing warm-up. And it's for some fucking awful game show premise that they have. And so, he turns on the thing, and he's, he's a... kind of like Burn Bridges kind of character. And he looks over at the at the game show host and he goes, okay, when Fred comes out here, we're going to make Fred feel very welcome. And we're all going to say on the count of three, Fred, what's with your fucking hair? And the network executive is watching horrified. And I'm like, that would be the best warm-up to go to ever.
Oh, man. I mean, watching that guy snap and lose it.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Brody. Watching Brody when he finally snaps for real, that'll be the best audience warm-up ever.
That'll be huge.
Yeah, that'll be a real special day.
What was your hashtag war when you were on? Do you remember?
Oh, my God. I don't remember.
Eh.
I don't remember.
We'll look it up and I'll put
it. I'm sure you could find it.
Yeah, I'll put it in the intro.
Fuck.
But that's...
I remember one, the first time I did it, it was like bad vacation spots or something like that. I can't remember. And I did Cabo San Lupus, and that got a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and the hashtag wars are great because it's almost like you get to exercise every hacky sort of like jokey, like punny impulse you ever have. Right?
And I'm telling you, I think that's how a lot of people's brains works, but it's definitely how comedians' brains work. We just know don't take that to stage. But right. Yeah, Mad Midnight is like a forum for it.
Oh, it's so, and it's such a refreshing show because it's fucking brisk. And it's like the Jeopardy of comedy.
Yeah. Hardwick nails it with that show.
Yeah.
He's great, man. He's doing good in the world.
Yeah, he's putting good shit out into the world. And also,
and a lot of it.
Yeah. Just a ton of it. I saw it came up in my iTunes. He interviewed Bill Gates recently.
Did he really? Yeah. Oh yeah, I think I saw that. I'm very good friends with Jonah, who's like the third member of that Nerdist crew. So I always follow his antics, and yeah, I can't believe some of the interviews. He was telling about the Tom Hanks interview and just how cool that was. There's also Katie Levine. She records all the Nerdist podcasts.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm friends with her, and she tells me the behind the scenes, and like they've had some cool interviews.
I can't remember which one it was.
It's like you and I are sitting in your basement in Park Hill.
Right.
They're doing like Tom Hanks.
Right. Yeah, Bill Gates. Yeah, here we are, Park Hill, drinking water.
Drinking water on a Friday, like some real G's.
Yeah, that's right. Hardcore. With my Banana Republic clothing.
Fuck yeah. I got, I think these are Banana Republic pants, so I'm with you.
Yeah, no. We're soul brothers in that way. But so one of the things that you've been working on, and I saw you guys are, it's with True TV. You guys are doing Those Who Can't, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you got a pilot coming up, or have you already filmed it?
We've already filmed it.
Okay. What's next?
Well, this has been a long, weird story. Like, we filmed it 2 years ago for Amazon. I don't know if you knew about that.
I did. I read about it in, I want to say, like 5280 or something.
Yeah, that makes sense. Joel Warner did an article on us. We wrote this pilot, Those Who Can't. Amazon gave us some money to film it
right.
when they first premiered TV. Like, Amazon's doing original content. We were one of the first six episodes and six programs, rather.
Right.
All the other five had huge budgets. We had nothing. And ours tested higher than anybody's. Like, people loved it. It was so funny. And Amazon's like, cool, let's off we go. And so they paid us money. We wrote six more scripts.
Yeah.
And we thought all signs point to yes. And then we were dropped. Just. That didn't happen.
And you guys, and you don't know why?
Or don't really know why. Amazon said went in a different direction, they said.
Hmm.
Towards transgender and awards, so maybe they were doing the right thing. But regardless, we got dropped. We thought it was dead. And then 2 years later, True TV, the network, is converting into comedy. One of the network execs' girlfriends saw the Amazon pilot, because that was the thing. We made our pilot. It was released. A lot of people saw the pilot. And she's like, whatever happened to that show? And then they inquired, and they bought it off of Amazon, and we just reshot the pilot.
Okay.
And it literally is, they're testing it like today and yesterday.
Wow.
On test audiences.
So it's like February 6th as we record this. Yeah. So
we've been told we could hear any day, could be a few weeks. I think they have till the end of March, and then we're like to make, that's how what it says in the contract. They have to let us know by then.
Wow.
And so we could be, if we get picked up, we'll be making season one of that show real, real soon.
Wow.
Yeah.
That would be fat. Would you have to go to LA for that?
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. We filmed the pilot in LA, which is so backwards. I fought so hard to try to film it here. The show's set in Denver. We're in LA, like making sure to not get palm trees and shots to make it look like Colorado.
It's like The Office, like when they have like snow episodes.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, they're all wearing coats, but you can't see any of their breath.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, yeah.
So we'll be filming it in LA if we film further. But we filmed the pilot. It's fucking funny. I'm very proud of it.
Good.
Hopefully it sees the light of day.
Yeah, no joke. I saw you posted, I want to say on Facebook, and this was a little while ago, but like the teaser trailer for it?
Maybe the older one.
Possibly.
Maybe the one for the Amazon one.
The joke that you have in there was one that really like hit me where I live, where it was like, it's Madrid.
Oh, yeah.
Not Madrid, because my Spanish teacher, I had a great Spanish teacher in high school.
Uh-huh.
She was like summa cum laude in like University of Madrid.
Oh, wow.
And so I went with her. Her husband still lived over there. So we learned like very strict like Castilian Spanish.
Sure.
And so I'm like, fat, dude.
I lived in Spain.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And I studied abroad in Spain. I studied abroad when I was a junior in Madrid.
Madrid.
For a semester.
Right.
And then I graduated from college and I wasn't doing jack shit and I had a friend moving back to Spain. So I moved back with him and another buddy to Santiago de Compostela, which is like right above Portugal.
Fuck the at the end of the Camino de Santiago.
At the end of the Camino de Santiago. It's the third biggest cathedral in the world is there.
Yeah.
And it's a huge pilgrimage spot. So we lived in that town.
I interviewed a dude very early on in this who is writing a book about walking the Camino.
Oh, really?
And yeah, he's got a whole blog about it.
That's cool.
And so I did a copy edit and like a first pass edit at of his book. It sounds badass. Did you do any of it?
I never did the Camino because I lived at the end of it. But I right. That town where we lived was where the pilgrims came.
Yeah.
But it's also a giant university town. So I was 22, and there's 60,000 college students in that town. Right. So we had a blast. But yeah, no, the Camino it starts in France.
Yeah.
And it's across the entire top of Spain, and you ride your bike or you walk and you stop in. There's people that put you up. They give you wine. Yeah. It has a lot of religious connotations, so you can stay in church. You're literally a pilgrim. But it's also just like a cool cultural thing to do. I've always wanted to do it.
Yeah.
Having lived at the end of it and seeing so many people come and like celebrate finishing their Camino.
Yeah, I'll bet they look fucking haggard too,
yeah,
at the end.
Definitely.
Of it.
But I mean, like, you know, honeymoon couples will do like, let's do three stops on the Camino. It's romantic thing to do. Yeah, so I lived there for the second half of my time in Spain. So all said and done, I lived like a year and a couple months in Spain.
Wow, that's badass. How's your Spanish now?
Man, it sucks. Like, it used to be, I'm fluent. I can get anything I need, but I used to be like on point. Dreaming in Spanish, like perfect pronunciation, not have to think about anything. And so it woes me how far I've fallen.
I almost never use it. And I took the AP test in high school. I got like a 4 on it,
I think. Good.
So, yeah, I did. I mean, and so we went to Spain for like 3 weeks. And while I was there, like just immersing yourself, you'll pick it up fucking quick.
Oh, yeah.
Which is awesome.
It is. I mean, the first time around I lived with a Spanish family, they didn't speak English. And it's like, okay, off you go.
Yeah, you figure it out. And I remember I was writing a postcard to someone back home, like in English. And I remember like trying to, I had started to think in Spanish to the point where writing in English was really hard.
It's good.
And I go, nice. And I felt really good about that.
Yeah.
It came back to me. We were in Munich for Oktoberfest, and we were sitting there with the Spanish couple, and I was all drunk, you know, on fucking liters of beer, and I'm like, let's speak some Spanish. And so when you're drunk, man, it came flowing through me.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. And I'm like, oh, this feels so good. I haven't done this in too long.
After I lived in Spain, I came back here, and then two other friends, we backpacked around Mexico for a couple months. And I dropped that Spanish accent real quick.
Yeah.
When you're in Mexico, they do not like that.
No, they don't care for that.
But that was 10 years ago. And I just got selected to be in this comedy festival in Mexico.
Wow.
In April. And the guy hit me up. He's like, I hear you can speak Spanish. And I was like, kind of. And he's like, can you do a set in Spanish? And I was like, dude, I could try. You know, if I'm drunk, I'll bullshit my way through it.
Right.
And he's like, that's cool. And then I looked on the lineup, and it's like every night of the festival is in English except the last night, which is Spanish-speaking night. And it's literally like, Spanish night, Adam, Caton, Holland, and friends. And I'm like, what are you hoping that I do here, bud? But we'll just see how that one goes.
Holy shit.
That's in
dude.
April. Yeah, I might need to like practice a few times.
Yeah, no, most definitely. That Michael Phelps, he recommends Rosetta Stone.
My girlfriend's doing Rosetta Stone Spanish
right now.
And I'm trying to help her out, but... She's just at too low a level for me to fucking intervene yet, you know.
Yeah.
Get to level 2, and then I'll step in. At this point, it offends me, her lack of Spanish at this point.
You're like, you don't even know future tense, and future tense is easy.
Yep, exactly. So. And then she cries, and then it's a fight for like 2 days, and it's just not worth it right now.
That's bullshit. She's got to get her Spanish up.
I know. Get your game tight, girl.
Yeah. Come on, fuck.
Come on, Katie, get it together.
Yeah. So, normally I do this chronologically, but... Fuck, these things go wherever they go. I mean,
yeah. Sorry if I'm all over the place.
No,
typically how I roll.
This is
scattershot.
Yeah, no. The conversation goes wherever it goes, which is why I love the podcast so much. So you mentioned in your 50th episode that someone gave you the inspiration to do a podcast. How did you sort of come to decide like what the scope of it was going to be? Because it's listed as, you know, how do you define success, that kind of thing.
Yeah, right.
And so how did that come to be?
Well. The Grolix is our monthly show, and we fly in a guest every month.
Right.
And usually it's our friends who are, if not well-known in comedy, right on the cusp of being very well-known in comedy. So I had an extra guest bedroom.
Like who was the last one?
This guy Barry Rothbart.
Okay.
He's hilarious. If you don't know him, you should.
Okay.
He's been on The Tonight Show. He was actually in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Really? Who was he?
He was supposed to have speaking lines that all got cut out. But he's in Leo's crew. He's one of the Dancing Fools.
Okay.
He's like inner circle with Leonardo DiCaprio. If you watch it, you'd be like, oh yeah, that guy.
Okay. Is he like, do you remember the Karate Kid, how there was like one Cobra Kai who had no lines?
Yeah. That'd be Barry Rothbard.
Okay.
he's the silent Cobra Kai of the Wolf of Wall Street. But yeah, he was great. I'm trying to think who we had the month before that. I don't know. We always have good comedians. We've had Jonah Ray. We've had Sean Patton. We've had
Canaan did
Esposito,
one, right?
Canaan's done it. Rory Scovel. Tons of good comedians.
Right. I saw, by the way, just speaking about Canaan, because Canaan and Bronger, like, having them on the same
Bronger
bill.
Bronger did it on Halloween.
Oh, God.
He was in here in October.
Bronger kills me.
Yeah, he's so funny.
The very first time I saw Bronger, I had DVR'd, like, John Oliver's New York stand-up or something, and mm-hmm. he was on it, and he told the Eggly Bagel Face joke.
Yeah. I know that joke.
And I was hungover. And I was just beside myself, and it kicked the hangover right out of me. I laughed so fucking hard.
He's a good dude.
And he seems like a good dude. I went and saw him when he was at Comedy Works South, just whenever he was here for that. But I saw Canaan open for Patton Oswalt in 2009, like a week before my wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, this dude is going to be huge.
Yeah.
And his set was crazy good. And then I saw him open for Daniel Tosh in Grand Junction at one point, too.
Okay, so nice. Canaan is in Those Who Can.
Really?
Yeah, he plays character in our show.
Would he be a regular?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
God, this show has to get picked
up. I know,
up.
He's fucking great, man.
Jesus.
Rory Scovel is the principal in
Good
Those Who
God,
Can.
Good God, man.
Yeah, yeah, it's got to go.
It's a murderer's row.
It's fucking great. It's got a great cast.
Jesus Christ.
We're just fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
Okay, well, not that I can do a lot here from my basement in Park Hill, but whatever I can do.
Hey, all you need is one mic.
Yeah.
Wait, so what were you asking about? So the podcast.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, these guests were all coming into the Grolics. They were all staying with me for the weekend.
Okay.
And my friend Taylor, who runs a podcast called These Things Matter
mm-hmm.
with Kevin O'Brien, she's into podcasts, and she's like, you have like all these guests that are on other podcasts staying in your house.
Yeah.
You might as well podcast with them. And so she set me up. She produced it for the first couple of months. Then I kind of took it on my own. But initially, it was very much like different paths to success, and I was trying to essentially defend my decision to be in Denver. You know what I mean? But after a couple months, that kind of grew boring, because I was always asking people, like, what do you think? Am I making the right move? And inevitably, they were like, that's sort of a navel-gazing question, and sure, whatever, man.
They're like, it's sure fun being on your show to talk about you.
I know, and it's like, how vain is that? So it's just more turned into, yes, loosely defined as like the various paths to success, but it's just an interview, and I let it go wherever it wants to go. And I don't know. I wrote for Westword for years as a journalist, and I think I'm a decent interviewer.
Right.
So, and I try to do research and find out about the people. So it's just a conversation.
Yeah. Doing that in like an audio interview, especially a long form interview, it's challenging. Because, you know, you want to be engaged, and you want to sort of, I always tell people, like, when I interview people, because I interview a lot of people who aren't used to being interviewed,
uh-huh.
they'll be like, so what do you want to talk about? And I'll go, I have like four main things that I want to hit that like, I have the idea, like, these are the four islands that I want to make sure we touch. Outside of that, I don't really give a shit.
Like, it's cool too. Like, I'm the same way. I usually have notes written down. And a good interview is when I never look at the notes.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when it's just kind of gone all over the place. And you can tell when you're like clicking in.
Yeah.
Because you'll be like, all right, you're watching the clock. I hope I hit my like normal time. And then all of a sudden you blink and 25 minutes have elapsed. And you're like, okay, well, that was flowing organic conversation.
Yeah, no, that's
not like this podcast. We've just been stilted, awkward. I'm looking at my notes. You're looking at your notes.
I've been looking at my watch personally.
We're both just pacing. We haven't made eye contact in about 25 minutes.
Yeah, I drenched in flop sweat. It's just horrifying.
Yeah, I've been carving my name into your coffee table. It's been bad.
Yeah, which is amazing because it's glass.
That's that high pitched squeak people are hearing in the background. It's Adam carving his name into glass.
How, I gotta ask, how did you get Hickenlooper? You don't have to give up the secret.
No secret. That was a cool thing. He, reached out to me. I make all these sketch videos with the Nix brothers, these very talented filmmakers.
I met the Nix brothers at, the 48 Hour Film Project.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah. And what was theirs this year? Hard to Swallow?
Yes.
Yeah. That was funny.
They're hilarious and they're great filmmakers, and we've been filming stuff with them forever. And there's a guy on Hickenlooper's campaign team named Max Potter.
Okay.
He used to be the editor of 5280.
Right.
And he knew about us, and I guess Hick brought in Max Potter to think outside the box. So Max Potter was kind of like, why don't we film some little funny web video things with these guys? It was right on the heels of Obama being on Between Two Ferns.
Right.
So I think people were like, hey, look, comedy can help politics.
Right.
So they thought that for us. So we wound up filming two videos with Hickenlooper that they used on their campaign, just web spots.
Nice.
And then he was cool as hell. And so I just asked him while we were filming. I mean, these shoots were 6-7 hours. And I was like, how about you be on my podcast? And he's like, I'm totally down. And they came out right before the election. I think it helped them, you know, get, they're like, well, you, I bet you're that young target demographic. So it was, it wasn't that hard at all.
Yeah. You and your millennials and your podcast.
Exactly. You hipsters with your,
right.
Yeah. With all your talking points. So it was cool. It was easy to get him on.
That's cool. Yeah. I haven't had a chance to listen to that episode yet, but I've met Hick a couple of times and yeah, he's like a totally like normal laid back guy.
He's interesting. Like we have a bizarre amount in common. He went to Wesleyan University,
okay,
in Connecticut, where I went.
Right.
And he lives in Park Hill. He's, you know, a big Rockies fan.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a lot for us to talk about.
Yeah. That's really cool. Speaking of the Rockies, yeah. But I was going to take it in a different direction before you decided to shit all over it, which was you realized a lifelong dream.
I did.
Of throwing out a first pitch.
Yes, I did.
And how long were you fucking haranguing them over that?
I started harassing the Rockies on Twitter. I harassed them for about a year and a half.
Nice.
Of like demanding to be to be allowed to throw out the first pitch. And I like, because I'm a season, well, my dad's a season ticket holder.
Right.
But we've been going since 1993. Like I've been there with him. It's me and Pops.
Yeah.
And we've suffered through so much shitty baseball loyally because we're just our baseball fans and we'll never give those tickets up because we just like baseball. Even in the Rockies were having their worst seasons, we're like, hey, at least we have baseball, you know, because we didn't always have Major League Baseball in this city.
Which, so like the Todd and the Toddlers era, which that's a name that just makes me want to stick a spike through my eye.
Yeah, why?
I don't know.
I think it's pretty accurate.
Well, sure, but there was something about it, like, I don't know, I think the infantilizing aspect of it or... It was just like a cutesy poo like media thing, and I'm like, eh, it upset me.
I understand that. There's a lot about the Rockies that upset me,
right?
But they let me throw out the first pitch, so that was very cool. I broke them, like that Twitter campaign. Yeah. ACH first pitch was my hashtag, and it just kind of took on a life of its own. And these sports writers started writing about it, and that really kicked it into the next level. But it was very cool of the Rockies to do that.
Were you nervous?
Yeah, definitely. Because a lot of people came, and I'd made a big deal out of it, and I was like, I'm going to throw a strike, no fucking problem.
Yeah.
And I played baseball. I should be able to throw a strike.
Right.
But when I was walking out there, I was like, oh, fuck, what if I just throw it in the dirt? But fortunately, I pulled it off.
Or what if you suddenly get, like, Steve Blass disease?
What's that?
Steve Blass was a pitcher in the 70s who all of a sudden couldn't find the strike zone.
Oh, like Chuck Knobloch back in the day when he couldn't throw to first base?
Yeah, or Rick Ankiel, Mark Wohlers, like... All those guys, like, they can't, you know, they all of a sudden, they're just all over the place.
Just head trips.
Yeah.
I pulled it off. It went great. I was proud, and now that I've got what I want out of the Rockies, I'm like, I'm openly talking about how fucking awful they are as an organization. They're so bad. And they just feed us crap. Mm. And they're like, you like it? Here's plenty more. And like, promoting from within, just cronyism. I'll always go, and they'll always be my favorite team. But I like the Rockies, but it's really hard to be a fan of the Rockies.
Okay, so one thing I'm curious about, Rockies came here in 93.
Yeah.
We're roughly the same age.
Yeah.
Who was your team before that? Because you're a big baseball fan.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Denver Zephyrs were the minor league team here.
Yeah.
And they fed into the Milwaukee Brewers, so I kind of just like the Brewers by default. Mm. But I remember this is when in 91, I was 11, and that was the first year I was like, I'd played baseball, but that was the first year I was really starting to watch baseball.
Okay.
And there were two channels you could consistently watch it on out here in Colorado. It was WGN, Cubs, crap, or TBS, the Braves.
Yeah.
And that was that 91 Braves team that went to the World Series against the Twins.
Oh, yeah, right.
It was a hell of a World Series. It was like, they had John Smoltz, Tom Glavin, Steve Avery. It was a hell of a pitching staff. So that Braves team... I was like really into.
Gotcha.
And that was started a pretty good era of Braves baseball.
Yeah.
Now I hate the Braves. I don't care. But like,
no, that's good.
When I started out early, I was like, it was the best baseball and I could watch it every day.
Right. Yeah, when I think of the Braves now, I think of like Brian McCann being like way too self-serious and like policing the game and shit. And it's like, God, get over yourself, dude.
Yeah, I just more think of those like those great pitchers and Bobby Cox stoicism.
Right. I remember, well, see, because my parents are both from Chicago, so I grew up a Cub fan.
Okay.
Which, great.
That's tough, yeah.
Yeah. Cubs, Rockies, dude.
Cubs right now, hey, that's a fun, there's some life breathed into your organization.
Dude, I've got my hopes up too many times.
Yeah.
Until they're hoisting that fucking trophy,
yeah,
I'm going to be waiting for the punch in the face.
Okay.
All
that's,
right.
That's so, a Cubs fan.
Yeah, exactly. But I remember in 89 when the Braves were dog shit and the Cubs were great, there was one guy on the Braves who was terrifying and used to light the Cubs up. And then did it to the Rockies, and it was Smoltz.
Oh, yeah.
And Smoltz was the most terrifying pitcher I think I'd ever... on my radar, he was just petrifying to me.
You know who was scary, now that we're talking 90s baseball? No. Was Dave
Stewart. I know how to drive ratings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy, that pitcher for the A's.
Yeah.
I like that A's team, like the Bash Brothers. And so I remember him. He has the most high-pitched voice, but he's the most terrifying looking man. I would never want to face that dude.
No, Dave Stewart was, yeah,
he's a badass.
Yeah, and my favorite guy on those teams, outside of Ricky, of course.
Yeah, definitely.
Was Eckersley.
Yo, of course. And I think Walt Weiss was on that team.
Walt Weiss was on that team, and Walt Weiss was like rookie of the year in like 88 mm-hmm. or something. And then Carney Lansford with his crazy like fielding position and like,
see, they're a fun team.
Yeah, dude, like just personality on that team.
My new goal is like, I was really excited to throw out that first pitch, but now I want to take BP.
Oh,
like
nice.
I feel like when you're like, I'm not there, but I feel like the big celebs are like, why don't you step in and take some BP?
Right.
I want that. I want to take some BP.
I used to be a big wrestling fan and Mick Foley. You know, mm-hmm. Mankind.
Yeah.
He
I just watched Beyond the Mat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I love that documentary.
Yeah. My friend Ian Douglas Terry, who's a funny comedian and just moved to Denver, he's a wrestling fanatic and he's always like feeding me documentaries. So I just watched Beyond the Mat.
Beyond the Mat is, yeah, great documentary. And Jake the Snake makes me sad. Although,
dude, that was ridiculous. Well, I won't ruin it for your fans, but it's just like smoking crack in like a Kearney, Nebraska hotel room.
Yeah.
Whew.
Yeah.
Not all limelight.
Yeah, and, you know, Jake's like, hell, I could be mayor here tomorrow if I wanted to be. And it's like, dude, there were like 300 people at this thing.
I know.
But anyway, so Mick Foley had, the night before WrestleMania, it was in Anaheim, and he went and took BP, and he wanted to put one over the fence.
Yeah, of course.
Well, he ended up pulling a fucking muscle in his oblique, and he and he blew a spot in the match, like,
oh man,
because he was all blown up from doing BP the day before. So,
man, the more I learn about wrestling, the more into it I get. I think it's a lot like stand-up comedy, to tell you the truth.
Oh, dude. Well, if you haven't listened to Nerdist interview either Chris Jericho or CM Punk.
I have not.
Get those ones. They're great.
I will.
And it's a very similar sort of thing. And it reminds me, I have to travel on the road a lot for work, and people think going on the road is glamorous.
Right.
And it's a grind, man. Especially like, I'm doing these trainings, so I'm up and I'm on for like hours at a time. And I don't know if this happens to you, but when I get done with that, I have like this big come down and I almost get a little depressed.
Yeah, definitely. It's a high. You're experiencing a high for the whole time. And then you're off the stage and you're just like, well, I kind of want to keep chasing that high. That's why so many people have drug and alcohol problems out of this field and wrestling.
It's just right.
They just don't, they get that big high. That's what they live for. And then it's done. And everybody goes, the lights turn off and you're still like, well, what now?
Yeah.
I'm alone. I'm on the road. Like it's temptation time. But you know, that's why you just got to like keep an even head and go work out. Run in the sad hotel gym room, you know, like.
You know what the best station for running in a hotel gym is?
Huh.
It's ESPN Classic.
Okay.
Because you can still listen to music, but there's still visual stimulation.
That's a good tip. I will fucking use that.
So, yeah, I ended up watching like these old, like, you know, bowl games from, you know, fucking 1998 or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, hey, there's, you know, Eddie George or whoever.
Yeah,
and,
no, that's a good idea. ESPN Classics. I like that.
Yeah. And because, like, I don't like shit where I have to read, like, if I'm running. No, fuck that. Or if there's like dialogue, or I don't read the closed captioning, but if there's a game going, like you can follow it along.
Yeah, I usually find some sort of sports.
Yeah. And ESPN Classic, there's almost always like a game.
That's a good tip.
Yeah.
Good tip.
So it's a good thing you did the show.
Yeah, this has been worth it.
Yeah. Beneficial hour of your time. So what's coming up next for you?
That album.
Outside of Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. I have a bunch of gigs around town. I'm excited for that album. It's coming out April 10th.
Has it got a title?
Backyards.
Backyards.
Adam Kane Holland, Backyards.
Nice.
I have a line and a joke about, it's kind of my ethos. It's about not living in New York or LA. And I have a line and it says, like, I'm sorry that I believe kids should be raised with backyards, not commercial auditions or a vague appreciation of jazz. So I just kind of, Backyards became the mantra off of that album.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things like where the title finds you, right?
Yeah, it totally is. And like, yeah. I don't know, I got this guy Dave Clock, who's a really good artist out of LA, does all the Meltdown stuff. He did the cover, and it's not like most comedy covers are just like a picture of the guy, but mine's like this cool like aerial shot of Backyards that he drew this beautiful drawing. And if you look at the album, you'd be like, this is from like a sad singer songwriter, Adam Kane Holland, Backyards.
This is like an Elliot Smith album.
It is. I mean, so at least the art kind of looks like that. So. I'm psyched for it.
That's awesome, dude.
Yeah.
Where can people find it, and where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at Caton Holland, CAYTONHOLLAND. And then I got a website, adamisfreakingoutrightnow.com.
Yeah.
That's all things me.
Yeah, no, it's a great website. That's where you can find My Dining Room Table.
Yes, indeed.
And your album will be, you'll probably link to it through there, right?
Absolutely. It's not till April, but yeah, it'll be out then.
Fantastic. Well, we'll make sure to pimp the shit out of it. I want to tell you that the things that you do, I've been following you for a while, like, from the Geek Bowl fucking rules to the Westward to the podcast. You're an inspiration to me, so.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you.
Thanks for doing what you do, and, man, continued success to you.
Thank you, man. Thanks for doing what you do out of this basement in Park Hill, where I'm from. These are my streets.
Yeah, dude, two fucking houses down.
That's crazy.
All right, bestie, Adam.
All right, thanks.
And that concludes episode 50 of the John of All Trades podcast with Adam Caton Holland. God, what a great episode, and what a great dude to hang out with. So, big ups to Adam. Make sure to follow him and everything that he's doing. Check out his website at adamisfreakingoutrightnow.com. Go to his Twitter handle. He is at Caton Holland, CAYTONHOLLAND. He just spelled that for you, but I wanted to do it too because I like pointing people to cool shit. And Adam Caton Holland is the coolest. So, what else can I say? It's episode 50. If you've been with me since episode 1, thank you, thank you, thank you. If you are here for the first time, thank you, thank you, thank you. We hope you come back. John of All Trades is on Facebook at JOAT Pod. Also on Twitter at JOAT Pod. And of course, all episodes are available online for free at johnofalltrades.us, J-O-N, ofalltrades.us. We announce new episodes every Monday. They come out on Wednesday, so hit us up on those platforms, Facebook, Twitter, or the homepage. And you will stay up to date on all the new episodes. 51 coming up next week. We roll right along. And in the interim, before we get to that, this is how I close every episode. Say goodnight, Gracie.